Oh, excuse me for a minute while I step inside the control room. Ah, that's better. Now, please be patient a few more seconds while we pay the bills.
Did you say Hairmaster?
No, you dimwit. Airmaster.
Caremaster?
No, Airmaster.
Daremaster?
Clean your ears out. I said Airmaster.
Stairmaster?
Oops, don't try that one. It's probably trademarked by someone else. Airmaster.
Ha ha, got you on that one. I said Stairmaster. S-T-A-R-E, Master. Tearmaster?
I'm going to tear you. Airmaster!
Oh, I get it. Airmaster.
Yes, Airmaster.
But what do they do?
Airmaster Aerator, the patented aerator that makes a difference. More than an aerator, a complete waste treatment system. Airmaster Aerator.
This column, entitled Procurement Follies, was written by Jim Thompson. I'm Chuck Swan reading it for Jim because Jim is away. And Jim says, it is procurement month at Papa Ritalo Publications. The mill-related troublesome issues that can be attributed to the purchasing department are myriad and legion. This is not to say that there are not great purchasing agents, but this is a focal point of interaction with outsiders. It can lead to grand levels of loss through misunderstanding, incompetence, and fraud. We'll leave the latter, fraud, for August, when the pulp rats will be back once again to discuss corruption. In the meantime, we'll have plenty to do in the former subjects. I have seen many missteps in all these areas. I want to discuss two issues today, two issues that are critical even before one arrives at the content of purchasing documents. And Jim goes on to say, the first issue is this. Purchasing agents who procure daily consumables, starch, oil, paper chemicals, and so forth, have a totally different mindset from purchasing agents who procure for capital projects. It is simply different work. Purchasing daily consumables is routine, for usually the same suppliers are dealt with over a long period of time, and the relationship with each supplier involves the same people over and over. The suppliers also know to have a bit of this and that tucked away conveniently close to the mill to cover any miscalculations and to avoid running out. Usually, little expediting is required, and the mill naturally gravitates to suppliers that will keep them running. Shut the mill down once, supplier, and see how long it will take to kick you off the site.
And now let's pause a moment for this message.
If your equipment installation, construction, or maintenance project is complex, your choice is simple. C.R. Meyer, a nationwide full-service general contractor, specializes in the most complex projects in the pulp and paper industry. Our millwrights, pipe fitters, iron workers, boiler makers, carpenters, laborers, cement finishers, operators, and a team of knowledgeable technical and professional staff are effective and efficient in any shutdown, planned or unplanned. Take the simple step to getting your next project done safely, on time, and on budget. Contact C.R. Meyer at crmeyer.com. That's crmeyer.com.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the conclusion of this week's column.
Construction procurement is completely different. On a construction project of any decent size, it is likely that the mill will be working with at least some suppliers with which they are not familiar. Hence, everyone has to become familiar with and comfortable with a mutually agreed set of terms and conditions. Carriers may be unfamiliar, and equipment may be procured from literally anywhere on the globe. Customs clearance may be a problem. Expediting is a particular problem, and expediting must be proactive weeks ahead of when items are needed. One cannot just look out the door, notice that something has not arrived on time, and then start asking questions. Expediting has to be done on the entire schedule: engineering, manufacturing, transporting. starting the day the purchase order is signed. Untimely deliveries can cost the project millions of dollars. Federal Express has created an entire division to handle problems in this area. They call it Custom Critical, a great name if I have to say so myself, and out on the interstates in the U.S., you can often see these Custom Critical trucks zipping along. They are very distinctive and have sleeper cabs designed for two drivers. They do not stop until the mission is completed. The other issue I want to bring to your attention this week is doing procurement from multiple sites. This is a no-no, especially on construction projects. I recently encountered a situation where procurement up to a certain arbitrary dollar figure was done on the mill site, and above that arbitrary figure was done at a shared services site. There was no good reason for this, and it contributed to a disaster of the highest order. Why? There is no dollar-defining amount as to what is important and not important in a construction project. No doubt all the million-dollar widgets are necessary for startup, but so are some of the $5,000 ones. It all has to be brought together in a manner similar to a conductor directing an orchestra. The only way it can be done on two sites is that a high-level manager is at one site and all the real work is done at the other. And yes, even in this day of the Internet, this is true. Purchasing agents need to sit together and talk to each other on construction projects. What do you think? Did I miss anything? Please take our quiz online this week and let us know your thoughts. And, of course, you will have standard safety language covering a broad scope of safety issues in all your procurement documents, won't you? Be safe, and we will talk next week. Nip Impressions is written by Jim Thompson, usually voiced by Jim Thompson, and is copyright 2016, Paparitalo Publications, Duluth, Georgia, USA. All rights reserved.
Oh, excuse me for a minute while I step inside the control room. Ah, that's better. Now, please be patient a few more seconds while we pay the bills.
Fulton Systems is North America's leader in terms of thermocompressor and steam systems installations. Our references in the paper industry includes over 80 years of support, thousands of operating thermocompressors, and hundreds of paper machine rebuilds. Additionally, we provide dryer section performance audits, steam and condensate system design, and consulting services. Give us a call at 770-447-1400 or visit our website at www.fultonsystems.com.
The following column was written by Jim Thompson. I'm Chuck Swan, reading it for Jim because he is on the road. The title of the column is What's in a Contract, Part 1. And Jim says, "It is true that if you want something in a contract, you must put it in the contract. It is also true that there are things not in a contract that are implied. A basic principle in the laws in the United States, at least, is this. If you accept money to do a task, there is a contract. It may be a verbal contract, but it is indeed a contract. Unfortunately, such contracts, if they involve a substantial claim by one party against another, will be sorted out the expensive way in court. For an example, when I was a young engineer, I had a small consulting practice for a few years. A friend who sold custom wooden trusses came by with a drawing and asked my opinion. His company said they would pay me $500 for my professional opinion. The request was this. They had accepted a project to provide very deep decorative trusses for the roof of a restaurant. These trusses were made out of heavy timbers and were about 8 feet deep. The drawings they gave me were the architect's, which had three versions on it with the instructions that a professional engineer should select the appropriate one from the three. All three were very well designed, had plenty of steel stiffening plates, adequate bolting, and so forth. I examined the three, made my decision, wrote them a letter which I proudly stamped with my P.E. seal, collected $500, and didn't think any more about it."
And now let's pause a moment for this message.
CBG.
Morning, Tom. Give me some good news today.
Man, I really wish I could. We've got broken bolts and dryer cans, there are stuck studs in the pump housing, and to top it off, now they've broken a drill bit trying to get an alignment pin out. I think it's safe to say that the more we work, the farther we get behind.
So, Tom, are you doing this the old-fashioned way just for fun?
What do you mean?
Broken bolts, studs, drill bits, alignment pins, keys. CBG metal disintegration and stud removal can fix all those problems. CBG takes broken and stuck metal out of everything. Heck, they work on submarines, aircraft carriers, power plants, oil refineries, even a one-of-a-kind Ferrari engine, and have removed hundreds of dryer can bolts all over the U.S. I saw on CBGmaintenance.com they took out a 9/64-inch drill bit and removed 2.5-inch studs at a power plant.
Really?
Yep.
Okay. Can you give me that website address again?
It's CBGmaintenance.com. Bookmark the site and give them a call today. CBGmaintenance.com.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the conclusion of this week's column.
About 6 months later, an insurance adjuster showed up at my office. He started asking me about this work. He informed me that when the first truss was hung, two workers walked out on it and it immediately collapsed. They fell about 20 feet and one of them was impaled on a piece of rebar sticking out of the concrete. Fortunately, he survived. Unfortunately, I was being sued. It turns out that the truss company was on hard times and about to go out of business. They had made the trusses from rotten wood, had never added the steel splice plates, and had committed other manufacturing defects. Keep in mind that I had never left my office. I had never visited the truss company, examined the materials of construction, or seen the finished trusses. Others had chosen to expand my role in this project because I did not have a descriptive contract limiting my responsibilities. Fortunately, I had insurance for such matters and turned it over to the insurance company. Long story short, in another year, I spent a day in a deposition. Then I was present when the issue was going to trial. As often happens, the matter was settled on the courthouse steps the day the trial was to begin. Neither side wanted to risk going in front of a jury. This is normal. Yet even with insurance, I was tied up in this matter for about 2 years. These kinds of matters do not just happen to small players in small contracts. Over the years, I have seen many large corporations that were involved in large contracts end up in disputes which never would have happened if they had taken the time to write a solid contract. Over the years, I have made a substantial portion of my living as a consultant, being an expert witness in such matters. As we continue Procurement Month here at Paparitalo Publications, we'll dive next week into the basic elements of a contract that will have a good chance of keeping you out of trouble. This will be a high-level but instructive look. Have you ever been involved in a contract dispute? You may take our quiz this week to share your experiences. For safety this week, please remember this. Safety is implicit in all contracts you sign. Whether for buyer or seller, safety responsibility is difficult to avoid, as it should be. Be safe, and we will talk next week. Nip Impressions is written by Jim Thompson, usually voiced by Jim Thompson, and is copyright 2016, Paparitalo Publications, Duluth, Georgia, USA. All rights reserved.
Oh, excuse me for a minute while I step inside the control room. Ah, that's better. Now, please be patient a few more seconds while we pay the bills.
Well, it's time to start planning our annual recovery boiler outage again.
Yes, it is. Budgets are tighter than ever, even though business is good. And speaking of good business, sales is pressuring us to have as short an outage as possible. They need the production.
Well, getting in a hurry costs money and can lead to safety problems.
I know. And you know we are always under pressure for our safety record, too. It seems like corporate has nothing better to do than to keep pushing us on every front.
I think I have a solution to all of these problems.
What's that?
RMR Mechanical. They've done a great work for us in the past and have a great safety record, too. They almost always beat the schedule.
Sounds like this meeting is over.
RMR Mechanical, the only name you need to know for an economical, quick, and safe boiler outage. Phone 770-205-9646 or visit us on the web at rmrmechanical.com. This column was written by Jim Thompson, and it's entitled, What's in a Contract, Part 2. This is Chuck Swan. I'm reading the column for Jim Thompson because Jim, again, is on the road. Here's what Jim said. We talked last week about what is not in a contract and the premise that in the eyes of the law in most places, if money has exchanged hands, you have a contract. This week, I wanted to take a higher level look at what one might want to include in a contract, and we'll further simplify it by focusing on a contract that is of the time and material variety. Next week, we will talk about a performance-based contract. All contracts, regardless of type, should start with some general language involving safety, confidentiality, insurance requirements, and so forth. If you have safety training, make sure it is made a requirement of the contract. And further, when you do the safety training, have a responsible manager available to monitor it. I was recently at an outage at a U.S. mill where safety training was a joke. The session was conducted in the guardhouse, where everyone watched what I call a lawyer video, supervised by some contract employee guards that I don't think were old enough to drink beer yet. People were talking, checking their phones, and so forth while the video droned on for 15 or 20 minutes. If anyone got hurt on that site, the first thing their lawyer should do is subpoena the guards and anyone else who was witness to the safety training and trash it. It was pathetic, but I digress. Confidentiality and insurance requirements should be spelled out and met according to your company policies. Who provides hand tools, PPE, that is, personal protective equipment, and other small items should be clearly spelled out. If the contract employees will be driving motive equipment, what is your requirement for training and licensing to do this? If it is truly a time and material contract, that's about it until you get to the payment terms. For essentially, in a time and material contract, the contractor employees show up, look at you, and ask, what do you want me to do today, boss? Your choice is to carefully manage them or fire them and ask for replacements if you don't like their work. In other words, there is no performance guarantee in a time and material contract. You are hiring labor. It may be muscle labor or intellectual labor, but that's it. Performance is not promised, and it is up to you to manage to your performance requirements.
And now let's pause a moment for this message.
Oh, sorry about that. You know, my wife told me that if she ever heard a toilet flushing in the background again, she would hang up on me. That's a bad habit I had formed. Checking into a hotel room, calling my wife, and doing other essential tasks. You know, multitasking. Hi, this is Jim Thompson here. One of our advertisers has told us they used to advertise in a certain print magazine because they always found copies of that magazine in paper mill bathrooms. We pointed out to them that if you're advertising with Paparitala Publications, you can be found anywhere. For instance, right on the paper machine floor. Or at the ball game. Or in the backyard on a Saturday afternoon. Or at a wild papermaker's party. Or on your nightstand right before you go to bed. Where can prospects find your advertising? If they have a phone, tablet, or computer, they can find it anywhere as long as you are advertising with Paparitalo Publications. Go with the winner.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the conclusion of this week's column.
Accounting for time needs to be spelled out in your contract, After all, this is a time and material contract, so some sort of timesheet backup for invoicing should be required. It may be by the hour, by the shift, by the day, or whatever, but there needs to be an accounting. The rate schedule can be as sophisticated or simple as the conditions of contract dictate. Payment terms and eligibility for payment, an invoice, backup needed, and so forth, needs to be spelled out. As for terms, here's a special note to you large companies who think you have gotten clever in recent years and extended terms to 60, 90, or 120 days. Do you realize how stupid this is? Nearly everyone is jacking up their rates to accommodate your terms. You're not saving your company any money. In fact, you are costing it money. Your Treasury Department is borrowing money at the lowest rates since World War II, and you're asking for extended terms that are costing you as if we were in the 1980s and the prime was 21%. Want proof of what this is costing you? Ask for pricing for your favorite 120 days. Also, ask for pricing for payment in 5 days. Of course, you may have a problem with the 5-day request because your suppliers won't believe you will live within these terms. However, you can convince them that you will by voluntarily imposing a stiff penalty on yourself for not meeting them. You will be surprised at the bargains you can receive. Finally, make sure you spell out clearly under what conditions of non-performance you will not pay. This is fairly limited in a time and material contract, but I'm sure you can think of a few conditions. There are other matters to spell out, such as dispute settlement provisions, legal jurisdiction for adjudication, and so forth. You should already have standard language for this. Please take our quiz this week as we continue to explore procurement this month. As for safety, I am serious about these safety videos and safety training that I see taking place to get on mill sites. Most of it is a joke designed by lawyers. Doubt me? Look at all the injuries and accidents we report here at Paparitalo Publications. They often involve contractors, and they never stop. Be safe, and we will talk next week. Nip Impressions is written by Jim Thompson, usually voiced by Jim Thompson, and is copyright 2016, Paparitalo Publications, Duluth, Georgia, USA. All rights reserved.
Oh, excuse me for a minute while I step inside the control room. Ah, that's better. Now, please be patient a few more seconds while we pay the bills.
CBG.
Morning, Tom. Give me some good news today.
Man, I really wish I could. We've got broken bolts and dryer cans, there are stuck studs in the pump housing, and to top it off, now they've broken a drill bit trying to get an alignment pin out. I think it's safe to say that the more we work, the farther we get behind.
So, Tom, are you doing this the old-fashioned way just for fun?
What do you mean?
Broken bolts, studs, drill bits, alignment pins, keys? CBG metal disintegration and stud removal can fix all those problems. CBG takes broken and stuck metal out of everything. Heck, they work on submarines, aircraft carriers, power plants, oil refineries, even a one-of-a-kind Ferrari engine, and have removed hundreds of dryer can bolts all over the U.S. I saw on CBGmaintenance.com they took out a 9/64-inch drill bit and removed 2.5-inch studs at a power plant.
Really?
Yep.
Okay. Can you give me that website address again?
It's CBGmaintenance.com. Bookmark the site and give them a call today. CBGmaintenance.com.
This is Nip Impressions for the week of the 27th of June, 2016. The title, What's in a Contract, Part 3. As we wrap up procurement month, I want to talk to you about performance-based contracts. These are very different than most other contracts. They can be complicated to write, but if awarded to a competent bidder, can bring guaranteed results. In the length of a column, it is impossible to cover all the items necessary in a performance-based contract. Even in a relatively small project, the development of the contract can take considerable time and the contract can run to hundreds of pages. Why would one engage in a performance-based contract? There are several reasons. One may be a demand from one's board of directors or one's lenders. They want to make sure they are obtaining exactly what they want to procure. Another reason may be that one does not have the staff or experience to execute the work to be done. Finally, the project may require bringing together several contractors of specialized expertise and coordinating them in a special way. This is something of a subset of the second reason given, but taken a step further. So what's in such a contract? Time, money, space, specifications for materials of construction, and performance parameters. There will also be a lot of language about following all the applicable laws, obtaining all applicable permits, and so forth and so on. Likely there will be language about providing operator training, guarantees on workmanship, and durability. This is just the high-level stuff.
And now let's pause a moment for this message.
Did you say Hairmaster?
No, you dimwit. Airmaster.
Caremaster?
No, Airmaster.
Daremaster?
Clean your ears out. I said Airmaster.
Stairmaster?
Oops, don't try that one. It's probably trademarked by someone else. Airmaster.
Ha ha, got you on that one. I said Stairmaster. S-T-A-R-E, Master. Tearmaster?
I'm going to tear you. Airmaster!
Oh, I get it. Airmaster.
Yes. Airmaster.
But what do they do?
Airmaster Aerator, the patented aerator that makes a difference. More than an aerator, a complete waste treatment system. Airmaster Aerator. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the conclusion of this week's column.
One can usually walk into a facility and quickly determine if it is built on a performance-based contract. For if it was, and the contract writer was not diligent in their details, the facility will appear quite Spartan, perhaps dated. After all, you did not specify you wanted windows in the control room. A performance-based contract, besides having a price, location of the work, and the time to complete, will necessarily have some bonus penalty clauses. There will be a bonus penalty on completion time. By the way, it does need to be a bonus penalty, not just a penalty if not completed by a certain date. This is what lawyers call balance. If it is completed ahead of time, there is a bonus. Past the deadline, there is a penalty. As for performance, once complete, the provision for failure to build a facility that does not perform to specifications is called, quotes, liquidated damages, end quotes. This is usually a formula spelled out in the contract, say if the facility, for instance, meets 98% of production capacity, then the contractor owes the owner X percent cash in damages. It takes a long time to write a good performance-based contract. Once the contract is written and awarded, however, the owner's responsibility is to provide clear and easy access to the location of the work and stay out of the way. Many a contractor has successfully avoided penalties and liquidated damages due to interference from the owner. I should hasten to say that a performance-based contract does not have to be all-inclusive of everything involved in a project. It may be for just certain key pieces of machinery. It may be for construction phase. It may be for any portion you wish to carve out of the project. Just remember, such a performance-based contract only covers its scope of work and may not ensure a successful overall project. Finally, a performance-based contract may or may not be a firm lump sum contract. Example, you may decide you need 10,000 hours of labor from highly experienced electricians. You can find someone who will sell you this. All they have to do is be, quote, highly experienced, end quote, whatever that means. It does not mean they have to do your project in a satisfactory way. Maybe you run out of electrical tape, an item you were supposed to supply, and they did a lot of standing around. Not the contractor's fault, it's your fault, and all they did was do what they should. I give this last example to demonstrate how detailed one must be when preparing such contracts. You have to think of everything. Consider this, however. In any contractual situation, you will have to think of everything sooner or later. Doing so before the heat of the battle commences may just be the best choice for you. Any experience with performance-based contracts? Take our quiz online this week and let us know. Performance-based contracts must have a provision binding the contractor to complying with all applicable safety rules, regulations, and laws. Make sure these are covered. Don't leave anything to chance. Be safe, and we will talk next week.
NIP Impressions is written by Jim Thompson, usually voiced by Jim Thompson, and is copyright 2016, Paparitalo Publications, Duluth, Georgia, USA. All rights reserved.